This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Monday, back to school day, and it's September 4th, and it's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. Once again, this is C.A. Nuri, and I shall be your host for today as we continue a conversation briefly with Erin had on the clock. I'm going to continue this conversation because one or two things she pricked my imagination. I said, no, you can't just leave like that. I need to understand exactly what you're saying. Just yesterday, our prime minister had a shuffle. And I said, people have a shuffle all the time. This is not big news. This is small things. Allow our prime minister to do what he has to do. He is refocusing, re-strategizing into his last 2 years into this administration, or concluding the first 2 years, going to the last 3 years. Perhaps that's a better phrasing. And I could understand and appreciate that. He did one or two shuffles and he did a summary. He did a summary, and I said, there shouldn't be no complaints for that. So I wanted to quickly discuss that. And after that, I'm going to transition to Miss Erica Morris, who is the proprietor, principal at Legacy College Readiness and Tours, which is a comprehensive college readiness firm. And I'm trying to understand, what do you mean readiness firm? And why are we talking about colleges after school start, right? So I'm actually going to have her come on to explain exactly what it is that she does for Bahamian students and what we as parents need to be doing in order to get our students, our children ready for university, particularly since grades ain't really that good, right? Yeah. So I wanted to hash that out and say what things that we could be doing to help our students more. But let me ask Erin this. The prime minister had a shuffle. It was no big deal, right?
It was a big deal. I mean, it should have been a big deal, but it turned out to not be a big deal.
And you had some, for lack of a better word, concerns, or you want to do some commentary on one or two of the ministers. And I said, I want us to hash that out. On the other show, you mentioned before we transitioned, Miles LaRota, who was then the minister of NIB.
No, he wasn't the minister of NIB.
He wasn't the junior minister responsible for NIB.
I thought he was in the office of the prime minister.
He's junior minister, or not junior minister. Yeah, I guess, what is it? Junior minister.
I don't know if he was a minister of state or...
Minister of state, that's
the
better
word. That's what he was, right?
Yes, minister of state, not junior minister. Go ahead.
Right. But
responsible for national insurance.
But I think operating in the office of the prime minister, right? Or out from the office of the prime minister now... He is, again, Minister of State to OPM. I don't see any mention of NIB there. And now we have a substantive minister for national insurance, as Alfred says, immigration and national insurance.
So you're saying that LaRota was not promoted. He remains
It appears as if he was not promoted, right? Okay. That may be of his choice. Maybe national insurance is not where his passion or his technical expertise lies, right?
And mind you, we've had some issues with NIB, but Mr. LaRota was the only person who came toward the people and explained, these are the issues. This is where we stand, and this is what we are working on.
Yeah.
So I was comfortable with him, and it was a breath of fresh air to see someone so frank. Even though I felt uneasy, saying, but why he keep on challenging the prime minister
But he didn't challenge, I don't think you understand, he didn't challenge the prime minister, right? Mm-hmm. He spoke. And then the prime minister came back behind him and said something that seemed to contradict what LaRota was saying.
And then LaRota come back and say the same thing again after the prime minister said it again. It's like constantly the prime minister speak and made an official position that we ain't touching NIB.
Because he's the prime minister, I'll allow you to put the prime minister in the front. Like whenever the prime minister speaks, whatever you said falls behind him. I don't think that's what equal among equals means, but I'm willing to explore it. I don't think that LaRota was challenging the PM as much as LaRota was attempting to ensure that he acted with integrity and lived up to his real or perceived ethical and statutory duties holding that spot. I look to LaRota and I would say, hey, you need to figure out how you going to, I don't want to say promote, not necessarily promote, but not punish him or let people perceive or think that he's been punished, because he seems to be the only actor in the House of Assembly that is sincerely, I don't want to say that, in the cabinet space, that is sincerely attempting to not just balance their obligations to the various entities, but for that to be seen by the people, that he is attempting to balance these obligations.
Who's responsible for was responsible for disaster preparedness? Wasn't it LaRota also?
I think it was, eh?
And who's now responsible for disaster preparedness? I'm just showing you to see if there was any demotion or lack of responsibility.
Who knows? Because it was not clearly indicated in the information the government chose to share with us, the people. The thing about signs.
I think that LaRota got that one of his responsibility removed when he was confirmed as a state minister for someplace else. But we'll investigate that.
But what has he been confirmed as a state minister for?
I thought you got a list. You didn't see the list?
No. It says
someplace.
The thing that I saw from the government last night said Office of the Prime Minister. Again, you know, drawing...
So you're floating.
Drawing us back to our earlier show, who is responsible for the publication of verified information in a timely fashion? Because we pay in all kinds of people. Now we have a Ministry of Information. Is the communications office going to now sit under the Ministry of Information? Are they going to be answerable to the Minister for Information? Is the Minister of Information going to have to consult? You could imagine that you're the Minister for Information and you have to consult with the Office of the Prime Minister and the Communications Office before you could say anything about information. It kind of defeats the purpose, Mr. Newry.
I do want you to run through, and maybe you have to discuss this again on Wednesday, right? I see I have a 2023 Cabinet of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas brochure, picture thing, right?
The Aqua one, right?
Yeah, the Aqua one.
Yeah.
It has, I'm going through the names, Sad Philip Davis, Chester
Cooper,
Mara Bolet.
It only lists
Mara
Minister
Bolet,
of State OPM.
Ginger Moxie, Jomo Campbell, Pia Glover, Michael Darvill, Clay Sweeting, Keith Bell, Wayne Monroe, Vaughn Miller, Joe Beth Davis, Fred Mitchell, Glennis Martin, Obi Wilchcombe, Alfred Sayers, Ryan Pinder, and Michael Hykeetis, and it just stops. Unless I'm missing a page.
I think you may be missing a page, but I think I have that page, Mr. Newry, but it doesn't list anything but OPM for LaRota. Here it is. That's the last page that you're looking for, LaRota?
Yes, I don't have that.
Yeah, yeah, but it don't say anything.
Okay. Also, anyway, it has Basil McIntosh, Miles LaRota, and he's just a Minister of State of the office. So he has no portfolio.
But don't fear, because, listen, we got this another new ministry, right? Energy and Transport. This is very concerning for me. But let me tell you why. I'm happy, and I think a lot of people are happy to see the ministry, like a Ministry of Energy. They're happy to see BPL and BEC, because they're two separate entities, right? Remember, that's what you told us.
Yes.
Separated from the Ministry of Works and the other utilities. Now, there are people who are concerned about a move like that, right? And so we need to interrogate that. Why would you be concerned? Well, here's my concern. How are you going to create a Ministry of Energy and you have not had a substantive conversation with the Bahamian people about what you mean when you say energy, right? You haven't had a real conversation with us about anything energy related. And you know what the sad part is? The sad part is that your people so uncertain about what to say when they're questioned about, with reasonable questions, about things like, what is the rationale for shifting from the fuel hedge policy to the fuel surcharge increase policy? Something as simple as that, right? You all have created this environment at BPL where nobody want to say anything, and people like the new BPL board would have the audacity to tell the Chamber of Commerce, oh, we're not speaking to any questions put to the old board, right?
I appreciate your critique. I'm not even going to even address it. I appreciate it because I see your concerns. I'm not, right. The concerns are warranted.
But it ain't we even finished yet, right? Why are you putting energy and transport together? Now, this is very concerning for me. I can tell you why. Is it because you gain the bulk of your tax, the bulk of your tax revenue from energy-related activity and car and transport and airplane and boat-related activity? Or is it that all of the actors, right? Is it about the actors that are involved in these industries and you want that space, all of that to be managed by one space because it makes it easier for you to govern? You haven't even told us yet how you intend to fulfill your promise of making 30% of New Providence solar by 2030. And you only have 7 years left.
We have a minister who's going to be responsible for that now.
Now, she's going to be responsible for it. But the question is this. Can a novice MP and minister...
Why are you calling a woman novice? Like, that's a bad word.
It's not a bad word, but it is what it is. Can a novice MP and minister take on not just the portfolio of energy and all that it entails, but couple that with energy and transport? And are we going to see a similar are we going to see a similar situation where the most prominent part of the portfolio is taken and moved to the office of the Prime Minister? And is that why we don't know what LaRota get yet? Right? These are questions that need to be asked because it happened with Romy Ferreira. And we could see what arose out of that. Let me tell you what arose out of the Prime Minister taking that part of his the natural resources part of the portfolio from Romy Ferreira. Now you got a future, you got the current Prime Minister saying madness, like, yeah, a debt for nature swap. Is that what y'all been waking on in the office of the Prime Minister for so many years?
Let's pick another minister. We can come back to that too. Wednesday is a good day. When we do mash down, I have the 2 hours to hash everything out. We just limited on time. What other ministry or shuffle person you were...
I mean, we don't get to talk about Keith Bell anymore, eh? Because I think we need to harp upon the fact that Keith Bell should have been fired.
And I hear you.
Yeah,
and
okay,
perhaps
you put that
he should
one
have
on
been,
the side.
But if he was fired, would you have allowed him to be picked up for another ministry?
No, fired into the back bench. You go, you don't get fired and
he
then you could just get
He is one of the most
up.
Competent ministers that the Davis Cooper administration has.
Repeat it.
He is one of the most competent ministers the Davis Cooper administration has.
You hear it? You hear how it sounds?
Yeah, that's what
it sounds like.
Him.
Madness. First of
and
all,
that's why
there's
they continue
no
to push
thing,
him forward.
There's no such thing as a Davis Cooper administration.
Not according to this administration.
Second of all, there's no such thing as a deputy prime minister. Y'all might as well just pack up your bags. You let these by them, and I say that respectfully because that's how they are acting, right? You let them create a whole office that does not exist in the Constitution.
Semantics, Aaron.
It has no function but to establish a power hierarchy in your party.
So listen,
right?
let's go to this question. Do you believe Keith Bell competent enough to do what he to his new ministry? That's what the question is. That's
no.
the conclusion. You don't
no.
believe he's competent enough?
No.
You don't believe he have the skills
no.
to deal with housing?
No.
To build houses?
He got up and decided that it was not a problem
he
to
can't
conduct
build houses.
A swearing-in ceremony at a funeral.
Yeah, that's past.
Not just
that's
a funeral. It's not just a funeral, but the funeral
that's
of the immediate family member of the people being sworn in. He has shown us clearly that he is unable to exercise good judgment. I gotta go.
Anyway, you gotta go.
No, take time.
Okay. No, I just see the producer just step out.
Okay, so we got two new ministers,
yes.
Right? I'm not quite upset about that. Pia Glover role, labor in the public service, there's been a lot of movement in the public service. I am not sure if everybody is happy about it. But things are happening. I wonder why the shift from why did you have immigration and labor together in the first place and didn't think things like this was going to happen? But now you've shifted to labor and the public service. This has me a little bit concerned, Mr. Newry. You know why? Because I have not had one union member speak clearly to the memorandum of understanding struck up between the Trade Congress and the PLP while in opposition. Mm-hmm. I've not had one sensible, transparent clear statement.
The labor has, union hasn't commented on it either.
On how they got to that point and what the implications of said decision are, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so this troubles me. There certainly has not been enough interrogation in that space, especially since it appears we have a union to parliament pipeline operating successfully in the country. Now, Minister of State for Aviation in the Ministry of Transport, Investment and Aviation, I think that may be a good move. I think we require better, greater oversight for the aviation field, all of the small, particularly all of the small carriers and the inter-island travel. I think that's very important. And so I don't have a problem with that. I think that tourism investment in aviation is too large of a portfolio. Not only does it rest too much, quote unquote, power and discretion in one person's hand, but I think those individual portfolios require greater space to expand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Again, Leon Lundy, Leonardo Lightborn, Mikhail Bonaby, what they doing?
Are they a part of the cabinet or they're part of the backbenchers who were support staff in the Office of the Prime Minister? Because Lundy was in the Office of the Prime Minister, maybe as a parliamentary secretary.
Need to see their salaries and see if they were getting support staff salary. That's what I'm going to need to see.
Boy.
But yeah, this the national address from the Prime Minister was insufficient. It was insufficient.
It was a summary, though, Aaron. It wasn't even a summary.
It wasn't even a summary. And you scalped all of this talent from the media space, and this is all that you could come up with?
That's the best we have.
It's emptiness.
The talent that he scoped wrote that.
It's rhetoric.
I have a text that says, I agree 100% with Aaron Green, reference Keith Bell. His transfer is a mayor band-aid and represents poor leadership. Great story as usual, Miss Green. Keith Bell is a bohemian. One thing he could do is eat conch and build house. See? We could build house. Let's see. Whatever happened with the gun case involving the who? Anyway, won't be reading that. Good morning, Mr. Nuri. Was trying to get into Aaron's show, but maybe you can answer. The PM's justification for placing Jobette Kobe-Davis in energy, claiming she would bring experience having worked legally in the energy sector. But wasn't she the lawyer for the Bahamas Petroleum? What expert advice would she have for renewal energy? And I guess that's where the opposition comes in and they'll question all of that. And this person say, fire all of them. Oh, Lord.
Listen, that's not a... At first, it appears to be an unfair statement. But if it's true, like you say, that Keith Bell is the best that they have.
Yes.
Keith Bell is the smartest, the brightest, right? The most experienced, the most articulate, the most, I would say, charismatic. From the speech in the church, maybe he's the most charismatic. That's the best? Fire them all, then. It's a shame. It's a shame that we have to come to this place. But if that's the best you got and he's supposed to be the best, then something is wrong in the management there. Something is wrong. Fire them all until we figure it out. Because that is untenable, intolerable, and that you would not fire him. You know how easy it is to fire? You just fire him. People resign for less.
This text says, Keith Bell transfer to housing is strategic and being mindful of his former employers. And I find that behemoths tend to have all kind of conspiracy theories, right? We know that a particular housing development is a partner with the government in terms of building houses. The government have no other choice but to partner with them in order to have mass amount of housing constructed.
What's the name of the partner? Who they partnering with?
We partner with a number of construction companies, and one of the partners we're partnering with is Aubac Homes. You can go there and see that the government has been historically being partnered with them to build low-cost homes for Bahamians.
Aubac Homes, former CEO, is the gentleman who got up recently and chastised the government for having not repealed the Quieting of Titles Act.
So what have to do with partnering with construction companies?
I'm saying maybe the taxi union is not the only space that requires a code of ethic. I'm also saying, Mr. Neo, your producer's back?
Yeah, producer's back.
Right. I'm also saying that without mechanisms to manage conflicts of interest,
mm-hmm.
then people are left to speculate, especially when Parliament has been enabled to create that mechanism all they got to do is create an ombudsman and then couple it with the freedom of properly enforcing and empowering the free and enacting the Freedom of Information Act. It's as simple as that. You know what could make it even easier? Instead of the Prime Minister jumping up every 3 seconds and throwing his voice into matters that don't concern him, he could just shut up.
I'll close with that. This is Guardian Radio in the AM with C.A. Nuri. Of course, Aaron stayed an extra 10 minutes with me. The producer's back here. We're going straight to commercial break right now. And then we come back. We're going to be speaking to Miss Erica Morris from Legacy College Readiness and Tours. And it's a comprehensive college readiness firm. And we'll be right back to explain what exactly that is.
We're a sponsor on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. And of course, I have Miss Erica Morris on the line. Are you able to hear me, Miss Morris?
I can hear you loud and clear, Cecil.
Thank you very much. And thanks for agreeing to come on the show, right? I know that you have an institute, right, that you help Bohemian kids get ready for university life. And I don't understand what exactly is a comprehensive college readiness firm. What exactly is it that you do?
Okay. You would hear of a lot of people that's just assisting kids with getting scholarships to go off to school. I also do workshops from the 7th through the 12th grade on what you should be doing to prepare yourself to go to college. I also feel as one of the better ways of deciding which college you're going to go to and finding the best fit is, if you can, is to physically visit those schools. So I have a tour aspect of it. And the other thing, when I say comprehensive, well, we have a lot of students that go off to school, and a lot of them are like me. When I graduated the St. Augustine's College, June 24th, 1992, I had no idea what I wanted to do. I had no clue. And I just picked hospitality management because that's all I knew. Okay. And I wasn't going to be a doctor. Didn't want to be a lawyer, even though people tell me I can argue a point. I should have done that. Or an accountant, you know, that was just too much moving numbers around for me. So what I also offer is, and especially for ninth graders, I offer a career assessment, evaluations, okay? And basically, it's not the free ones that you get off of, the internet. And it's basically helping that child to decide, is this the field for me? Is this something that I really want to get into? After I switched my major from hospitality management, I went into marketing. And I had 2 semesters left for getting my bachelor's degree when I realized that marketing entails a lot of math. I don't need to know the logarithm of my money. All I need to know how to do is to add, multiply, subtract, and divide. And when I had to do a class, it's like quantitative methods of business, and it was all math. I said, nope, I'm not going to do that. I then switched my major again. So I switched my major 5 times because I didn't know what it was that I wanted to do. And then we have a lot of kids that go and get degrees for something that they're really not interested in. And especially as international students, they have to complete, go to school for those four 12 credits, or take those four classes, or they'll be out of status. So in the ninth grade, because we know going to the 10th grade is when you have to decide on which electives you're going to pick based on the career that you're interested in.
But let me stop you right there.
Go ahead.
Right? Mm-hmm. I always thought your college career, or the thought of your college career, started in grade 10, right? That's what they told me. Mm-hmm. Now you're saying that you are targeting ninth graders. And mind you, I understand why, right? Because 10th grade to me is kind of late. But go ahead. Why is grade 9 is important?
I actually think that process, that's why I said college. I do start college readiness from the 7th grade. In the United States, the college selection process starts mainly in the 7th grade. In China, it starts from kindergarten. Okay? And how do we do that? We do that through exposure. And a lot of people start that, like, how do you start that process in kindergarten? You expose your kids to different things, okay? And with me, I'm like, okay, I'm not going that far. I'll start in the 7th grade. I will be doing college tours in the 7th grade locally.
Okay.
Okay.
Because I was going to ask you how, right? And I'm going to be real in terms of Bahamians who are limited in terms of travel, limited in terms of finance, right? Mm-hmm. How do you prepare? In grade 7, I didn't even understand what was school. So you talk about college that seems so far off that I hear you say college readiness as early as grade 7. I just don't see how a parent who would see a child that finished primary school could say, well, let me have you tour when you ask a child what you want to be when you grew up. When I was in grade 6, I wanted to be Spider-Man. That's not a career. So how do I start saying, let me start selecting school to select to be a superhero?
Okay, well, now superheroes, I don't know, okay? My son in the 5th grade, he said he wanted to be a gamer. And of course, the mother part of me, oh, no, you're not. I'm not spending money for you to go to be a gamer. But then the college counselor part of me said, okay, let's do some research on what gamers do. Parents, they make a lot of money, okay? But which aspect of gaming do you want to do? Are you one of those that want to create the games and want to draw? That's one aspect of it. You know, are you one of those that want to build the game? That's another aspect of it. There are many different aspects of it. Are you one of those that want to test the games? And what I realized, so what I did, and I had the opportunity to, I took my son to 3 schools. We were in Florida at the time. We went to Ringling, a College of Art and Design. We went to another school called Weber, and we went to Florida Polytech. And each of them offered something different in gaming, each of them. Okay, and I know my son doesn't have an artistic bone in his body. He can't even draw a stick figure. Okay, so we knew that aspect of it wasn't there. So when we went to Florida Polytech, they have a gamer's room where people actually come and those kids compete. And it's like a stadium size. It's made just like a stadium. And people come in and watch those people compete, okay? And those gamers, they're good in physics, and they're good in math, okay? And they're paid handsomely to sit down and play a game for the company to say, okay, and for them to say, this is wrong with this game. I think if you did this, because if you look at the games like, oh, God, what do they play? Fortnite. Does it ever end? can you reach the highest level?
So, you know, let me ask this then. Mm-hmm. I'm in grade seven. No, my child's in grade seven. Your job mm-hmm. is as a readiness, college readiness so, professional. What are the steps? Okay, go ahead. What do you call seven. It?
So let me tell you what they do. So, you know, you talk to the kids, and I think that's in grade seven is when they should start doing community service. Okay? And even preparing a child for the SATs in the seventh grade, how do you do that? You read a lot. You have them read. You learn those vocabularies. They don't know that they're preparing for the SATs. And when you're going to do college readiness, so that's one aspect of it. You do college, you take them, like with me, I will be taking these kids to visit certain colleges locally, mm-hmm. but not to say colleges. So if we go into BTVI, I want them to go to the construction field, the construction aspect of it. So they're able to see, oh, if this is something that I'm interested in, you take them to a BAMSI, and you let them see what BAMSI does. BAMSI does a whole lot more than just farming. They think it's a field trip, okay? But you're planting that in their minds to say, hey, I saw that. I saw when they were dealing with the cows. I like animals. I think I want to do that. My child's father said he knew from he was 8 years old that he wanted to be a pilot. He went to an air and sea show. And he just loved how the Blue Angels, and he said, I want to be a pilot. And he fulfilled that. It's just about exposing your kids to different things and understanding that the world does not revolve around their little community. Basically, taking them out of their communities and visiting, you know, businesses, visiting colleges that actually have some of these degrees. And like you said, going on a farm. Watching someone help a cow give birth. Those are ways that you prepare a child for what it is that they want to do. Help them read books. I am a big proponent for kids, exposing kids. I'm a big proponent for that. And I do understand that not everyone is able to afford to take their kids out.
So Ms. Morris.
That's why. Go ahead.
Ms. Morris, basically you expose Bahamian kids to opportunities and so they can consider where they should pursue their educational aspirations.
And what they want to do.
So
much.
But
that's
okay.
What I do.
I know that you do a number of schools in the United States. I know, I'm assuming SATs are still important. What about this thing called ACT?
For some schools.
So what is important? What should our kids be aware of before they apply to go to university?
Well, basically, you basically have to find a fit. And that goes for me. I don't look at a child who says, oh, I want to go off to college. And I just look at the financial aspect of it. That may not be an important aspect for the student. Their parents may be able to afford $50,000. But do you want to go to a school up north where it snows? Do you want to go to school in the Midwest? Do you want to go to school in Florida? You know, those are the things that you have to look at. Is this school test optional? What do they mean test optional? Do you need the SATs or do I not need the SATs? I give you this example. Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University is one of the top aeronautical universities in the country, in the United States. They don't require SATs. Depending on which country you come from, they look at your country's standardized testing. I've had two students to go through there, and they looked at their BGCSE scores, and they wanted them to have a B or above in math and in English. Florida Institute of Technology is the same as well. And then you have some schools that don't look at the SATs at all. Then you have some schools, if you want scholarships, you have to perform at the SATs. I use Howard University as an example. I've had two students to go to Howard on a partial scholarship. Okay. And you might have needed $1,350. I have a student right now in Exuma that has a 3.98 and scored a 1410 on his SATs, and he wants to take it again. You know why? Because now Howard University was like, yeah, 1410 is good, but we have kids who come in here with a 1500. So that is what I help people, because you don't go to a school because that's where your friends went. Their experiences with their experience, that may not be the same for you. So I sit down with the student and I ask, you know, what is it that you're looking for? Even right down to the size of the school. I would never, and with me doing this for so long, I'm able to read kids. I would never put a certain student on the campus of the University of Central Florida, which is the largest university.
I want us to go through the process that a parent comes to you and what's the step. But before that, I have a caller who wants to engage you, but I want to go through that process before that. But let's patch this caller through. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me? Producer, patch the caller through. Can you hear me, caller? Hello? Call again once. Call again twice. Okay, that call
Hello?
Is gone. Oh, go ahead, caller. I almost missed you just now. Go ahead. That's Erica right, Morris. Yes. Go ahead.
I'm on to you and your guest. I listen to your guest, right? I have a son who is in university. Can you hear me?
Yes, down there.
Okay, the steps that we followed. We prepared my son. Number one, we didn't have the money for college. So because we know we didn't have the money, we had to look at alternatives. And one of the alternatives, we had to concentrate on getting the scholarship. So what me and my wife did to prepare my son, first of all, we prepared him for BJCs. BJCs would put him in a position to be recognized for scholarship. Once he got his BJCs, then we work on him getting his BJCSEs. Once he get his BJCSEs, then we work on getting his SATs. Once he get his SATs, we had three different schools that offered him full scholarships.
Nice.
Now, we know we didn't have the money to do it, so like I said, we work on alternatives. And I'm sure when I speak on the majority of parents in the Bahamas who don't have the money to go college shopping. Mm-hmm. And my son wanted to be a computer engineer. And we let him know, hey, the school that you go to will be based on which one offers you the best scholarship.
Understand.
So
I
think, preparing a child from grade 6, 7, I think that's kind of putting a little too much on the child. Because when you prepare a child for SATs from grade 6 to grade 7, I think that's too much because, the kids got so much other things to worry about. They got a lot. They got this. They got that. You know, I just think that's too much. That was our strategy. It worked for my son. Right. My son, he just started his sophomore year in university. And we're using the same strategy for my daughter.
May I ask you a question?
God's willing.
What universities are your son is attending?
Carl, did you hear that? What university your son is attending? Okay, we got disconnected with the column. Okay. But go ahead.
See, what people seem to say, oh, that's too much. No, it's not. Because reading a book is SAT preparation. Do we have kids that are out there on their spare times? Are we, as parents, are we telling these kids, okay, we need you to read a book? What does reading do? Okay, reading helps you with your vocabulary. You know why we don't normally do as well? And let me just say this, and then I'm going to tell you what my strategy is, how I assist people with going off to school when they come to me. You know, when you read, we'll use the SATs as an example. They may ask you a question. What is a settee? I may know what a settee is because I grew up in the Bahamas. Okay? And we used to call couches settee here. But an American may not know what that is. And how do you know what these different things are? By reading. That is SAT preparedness. You have schools that will give a child additional funding if they have a certain amount of volunteer work. That is preparing a child to go off to school. They want well-rounded kids. I didn't prepare my child. I didn't take any classes for my school, my child. Now, I will say this. You have some universities, they'll ask you, BGCSEs, what's that? They don't know what a BGCSE is. Now, if you're going to school in Florida, they will tell you, you need to have a minimum of 5 BGCSEs with Cs or above in order to come to, you know, to be accepted into our school. So you need to look and see what are the state requirements. You may be able to go to the state of Florida and get an undergraduate degree in architecture, but you're not going to do that in Pennsylvania. Why? Because in Pennsylvania said, if you want to be an architect, okay, you have to go, you have to do 2 years of theory and the next 2 years of practical. But because of your visa, you cannot do that. You can get a degree in architecture, but you won't be an architect. See, and that's what people fail to realize. So to back to it, there's so many things that goes into the college selection process. Me personally, if you do not have the, if you have the funds, that's fine. Sometimes selecting the school based on what scholarship that they give you may not be the best choice for your child. So you have to find something. You may say, okay, well, this school is giving me $30,000, but they don't really have a good computer science program. It may, and not to say that if it's not ABET, it's not good. I look for ABET. ABET will be the highest accreditation that you can get internationally in computer science. So those are the things that I do. So a parent comes to me, I basically tell them, listen, when you come to me, I explain who I am, and I say this to them, and all of my parents will confirm. When you come to me, you're saying, Ms. Morris, I am ready to cut the umbilical cord. And I let them know right off the top, and especially if their child is 18 years or older, because when this child goes off to school, the school looks at them as an adult. They're no longer talking to you. Okay? I need our kids to be able to speak up for themselves and say what it is that they want to do. That's what I do. So I ask certain questions for these children. What type of school are you looking for? First of all, what is your major? What type of school are you looking for? Are you looking for a private? Are you looking for, you know, a tech? Are you interested in going to a community college? Are you looking for a public school? All of this matters. And they narrow that down and say, this is what I'm, this is the type of school. You got to even look at where they want to be placed in a region. I have some kids who, even that is the better option for them to go, no, Ms. Morris, I don't want to go up north. I don't like the cold. It's finding the best fit for them. Okay? So once I get all of this, I have them narrow down the schools based on what it is that they want. And that's what we go after. Then I have a conversation with the parents. This is the school your child is interested in, and this is what the shortfall is. Now, I would love to know what school their child went to that got a full ride, because very few schools in the United States will give an international student a full ride. Are there some? Yes, but it's not that many. I've had children go to Morgan State on a full ride, but I had to negotiate their SATs results. And I've had a child who had an opportunity to go to Howard on a full ride. Very few schools give international students full rides. Okay? So once you've gotten all of that, you see what grades, what GPA, because you have to have some students. If you want to go into this particular program, well, did you take any physics or chemistry or biology while you were in school? These are things that you have to look at. It is so much more than just finding the school that's going to give you the most money, because that may not be the best fit for you. So when now we've taken care of all of that, Now I talk to the parents. How much can you afford? These are the schools that your child wants to go to. And they'll come to you all the time, Ms. Morris. I could only afford $5,000 for the year. Mm-hmm. So everything that the child said, okay, this is what they want. The parent can't afford that. Or they can. And for those who can't afford what their kids want, we go back to the drawing board. But I always offer, even the community college route, I offer that. And people have this notion, oh, you're going to community college because you're, you know, you couldn't make it into a four-year institution. You're not smart enough. That's not true. And I hope his mother doesn't mind. Well, she doesn't. I have a student who's at St. Petersburg Community College right now who had a 1380 in his SATs and had a 3.98, Miles Worrell. Brilliant child.
So my question to you, Miss Miss Morris, do you have a cadre of school that you have a list of schools that you say, hey, when you come to me, I'll try fit you into these schools? How did you find which school to send your children?
Here is how I do. I work with about 30 schools. I have a lot of schools that I keep my Family Island kids in mind. I have schools where if the parents that don't have that much, but with stackable scholarships, they do. And I have school, I have Emory University. You know, I have really high-end schools. Okay, but I work within a parameter of 30 schools. However, if a student is interested in working with the school on the outside of that, that's fine. I can do that as well. So it's so much more than just, oh, this school gave you the most money, so that's where you're going to go.
You mentioned Family Island schools just now, that you have a like a different approach for Bahamians who from the Family Islands in contrast to Bahamians from New Providence. Explain that.
Okay. Let me say what I said. When you have a child that is in a community of, their community may have like 800 people, their graduating class is 12. To put them on a campus of 10,000 or more may be overwhelming. That's what I mean. So I have smaller private schools. I have a school in North Carolina, St. Andrews, and I have one in Florida. Each of those campuses have about 1,000 kids on the campus. Remote town or even a community college with a, you know, a smaller community college. I would normally recommend that depending on the child.
Okay.
Now, you have some that can go to the University of Central Florida. And by the way, the president of the University of Central Florida, he's Bahamian too, Mr. Cartwright. Just thought you should know that. Okay? And then you have some kids that wants to go to the University of Central Florida. Okay? But if you are preparing your kids to go to school in the United States, you have some schools in the United States that says, what are BGCSEs? They don't know what that is. And BJCs now is just, it's a standardized testing for the Bahamas. You have schools in the U.S. who may say, that is of no concern to me. So finding out what schools they're going to, like you, like the gentleman said, the SATs afterwards, you're right. But let's hope that the school that your child wants to go to, the SATs aren't a requirement. We don't normally do well on the SATs, not because we're not smart. It's not because of that. It's because it's normally, in some cases, it's an afterthought. We focus more on the BGCSE. You see, that's what we focus a lot on. And then especially kids coming from the public school system, they need the BGCs in order to get a diploma. So it's a lot of moving dynamics in that.
Nice. So let's see. Mm-hmm. How to get in contact with you. If you have a young adult who is interested in going abroad, even interested in going to local colleges here, but they just don't understand exactly the process or what all the child needs to get into university, they get in contact with you. You guide them. How do they get in contact with you? And then your pitch.
Well, of course, they would either call me on 802-5278, or they can email me at legacycollegetours@gmail.com. And when they call me, they say, "Hey, Ms. Morris," and this is, I get a lot of my business by word of mouth. "Hey, Ms. Morris, I'm interested in going off to school, and this is what I want to major in." You have some kids that are sure, some kids that are not sure. Okay? And I offer, especially even if they're sure, I would always offer my the career assessment just to see. And you know why I do that? Because the parents, "Oh, she's going to be a doctor. She's going to be an engineer and this, that, and the other, blah, 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 blah." And I don't talk to the kids by myself. And then I get an email from the student, or I get a call on the side, "Ms. Morris, I don't want to be a doctor." Then we need to have a real conversation with the parents. And we go from there.
Excellent. That has been the conversation with Erica Morris. And the name of your company again, Erica?
It's Legacy College Readiness and Tours. And can I just let them know about the college fair that's coming up?
Quickly.
Okay. We have a college fair that's coming up at Atlantis on the 16th. September 16th. It's going to be at Atlantis. You can give me a call, and I can, shoot you a flyer for you to register, or you can go to my website.